From the Conference Center in Salt Lake City, this is Conversations, featuring discussions with members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints with a unique perspective or an interesting story. Today's conversation is with Stephanie and Christian Nielsen, survivors of a small airplane crash and authors of a blog followed by millions. Ruth Todd is the host. Ruth is a former television news anchor and is currently a radio and television personality.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Conversations on the Mormon Channel. I'm your host, Ruth Todd, and we are joined today by Stephanie and Christian Nielsen, who have become known all over the world because of their valiant battle for life after a near-fatal airplane crash during the summer of 2008. You may also know the Nielsens because of Stephanie's blog called The Nini Dialogues. This blog actually began back in 2005 and is read by millions of readers. Stephanie and Christian have retold their story in numerous newspapers, magazines, on television and radio programs. You may have seen them on The Today Show, The Oprah Winfrey Show, or other similar programs. Indeed, the Nielsens have a story of pain, struggle, and adversity, but ultimately a story of hope and inspiration. Christian and Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us here on Conversations today. Glad to have you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you.
It's been a long couple of years, but tell me how you're doing today. Stephanie, why don't you start?
I don't think it could get better. I think I'm happy where I'm at right now, considering where I was and the progress I've had to get to be here today. I could be done with all of my surgeries and be fine. I've sort of adapted to where I'm at today, and I'm as happy as I can be probably right now.
Christian, how about you?
Yeah, I feel the same. You know, 2 years ago, we were confronted by a fork in the road with this accident that we had, and there was a lot of uncertainty for a while we were in the hospital and shortly after the accident. And I'm just delighted that we're alive and we're together and we're with our family and we get to be here today.
You know, we don't get to pick our road, any of us, and you've had a really difficult road. Let's go over for our listeners and tell them what happened in the summer of 2008. Who wants to tell the story?
Go ahead.
Well, I'll tell a story. We, Stephanie and I guess we had been married 8 years at the time, and we were living in Arizona. In our time in Arizona, I was working for the Boeing company, and being around aviation a lot, I made a lot of friends who were pilots, and it's kind of a place to work where there's a lot of aviation enthusiasts. So I was had the opportunity to join a flight club and then ultimately find a flight instructor at Boeing and pursue flight lessons. He taught me everything that I know about flying, and he was with us the day of our accident when we decided to take a day trip to New Mexico, just Stephanie and me and our friend Doug Kennard. And we had a beautiful time. It was a beautiful day and beautiful scenery. We enjoyed a short day trip up at the ranch in New Mexico. And on our way home at a scheduled fuel stop, there's a lot of details about what happened, but essentially we didn't make it all the way home after that scheduled stop. On takeoff on the back home, we never finished our climb out of the airport, and we crashed in the surrounding neighborhood of the airport. And
was it in a field?
No, it was right on a residential street between a couple of houses, and which was the first miracle in the sequence of dozens and dozens of miracles that we didn't crash into somebody's house, or we didn't crash into some person, or we missed a propane tank by a few feet. We missed other deadly obstacles by just barely.
We did run into a truck.
We did hit a truck, but
no one was in it.
Helped us
no
stop.
One was in
no
it.
It was an abandoned old truck. From that point on, the miracles of protection and preserving our lives began.
Mm-hmm. All right, Stephanie, pick up the story from there. So the plane crashes. What do you remember from then on?
You know, I just, I I remember waking up and to just, I mean, my surrounding me was fire. Everything was on fire, and I could feel my clothes on fire. It smelled. It was just awful. And Christian had already gotten out of the airplane, and I saw the pilot, Doug, sort of slumped over in his chair, and it was just kind of surreal. And I just kind of jumped out of the airplane and stop, drop, and roll, let me learn, and I just did that.
Did that come into your mind?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. I could see my second grade teacher telling me to do that. So I did, and I just stopped when I couldn't roll anymore. I think I must have gone two lawns down. I mean, just kept going, and I just laid there thinking, I cannot believe what has happened to me, and I just kept thinking, I really want to go home. I just want to make dinner, and I want to go to bed, and, you know, I just
get me out of here.
I just knew it wasn't good, and then all of a sudden we had people all over in the homes near us come out and offer help, and I was lucky enough to have the bishop of the ward that was in that neighborhood come to me, and he gave me a blessing, which was a miracle. And I mean, it was an awful thing, but just miracle after miracle took place that I'll never forget. I mean, this sounds funny, it was an awful time, but kind of a very spiritual moment that I don't think we just have every day. You know, it was.
Is that because you're in a position where you are completely helpless, but to rely on the Lord?
Yes.
Is that what it was?
Yes. And you know, I saw, you know, it was a miracle. There were people there from the other side of the veil helping me and telling me, you know, I just got to keep fighting. And it was a miracle. And then they put Doug and I in the ambulance together. We were the most critical, and they said to me, okay, we're going to give you some pain medication that will help you. And then I woke up about 3.5 months later in mm-hmm. the hospital. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, I saw on one of the pieces of video, your mom speaking. I think this was from the Mormon Messages that's pretty recent, but is getting a lot of hits right now on the internet. And it's a wonderful Mormon message to all of our listeners. If you haven't seen Christian and Stephanie's Mormon message, it's fabulous. And you can go on LDS.org and link to it. But your mother said something that I thought was so powerful and poignant, and that was that your hospital room became a sacred space.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, I don't remember one bit of that part in my life, but
I do.
Yeah, Christian could probably
you tell us,
explain
Christian.
That better.
Well, it was a very, very sacred space. And
wait, before you go on, where are you now? Because you sustained burns as well.
Yeah, so we both, very similar thing. They put me in an ambulance as well. And burns are a very, very painful thing. And so we were asking for pain medication. And then when it came, it was basically a drug-induced coma. Mm-hmm. They put us to sleep so that they could do these necessary surgeries. And I woke up about 6 weeks later. And I woke up and asked about Stephanie, asked about Doug, found out that he had passed away. And my old motivation was to get myself strong enough so I could get out of bed or get into a wheelchair and be wheeled over to Stephanie's room because I wanted to see her. And that first time when it took several days mm-hmm. to...
This is after a six-week coma.
Yeah, after a six-week mm-hmm. nap. Took several days to build up some strength and stamina to get out of bed. And finally I got into a wheelchair and the nurses wheeled me over to Stephanie's room, and I remember feeling very, I was relieved that she was actually alive because I hadn't seen her since the accident and didn't understand how serious our injuries were. And for a while, maybe subconsciously, I thought everybody was hoodwinking me that, you know, she had actually died and mm-hmm.
Trying to keep you alive.
And so I was elated to actually see her, but also devastated to see how critical mm-hmm. she was.
Well, she had burns over 80% mm-hmm. of your body. Is that right?
Yeah.
And how about you?
Just like 40, so like half.
I don't really think most people say just 40, but in comparison, you yeah. were in better shape. So.
Yeah.
So tell us about that hospital room being a sacred space then.
It was so special. I walked in there, and it was when you're in that desperate situation, you're obviously, your posture is to the Lord. But going in there in that room and being with Stephanie and talking to her through that body that was on life support, basically, and praying in that room and having family in that room, and having family prayers in that room and offering priesthood blessings in that room, it was similar to that of a temple, a very tangible spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And every day it was a huge motivation to get better so I could go and see her. And every day I could spend a little longer in that room and eventually I was able to walk to that room.
I think at that time we were the most critical in the hospital, and it was probably the worst, you know, in the hospital at the time. And yet all of the nurses wanted to come and, you know, spend time in our room. They wanted to come, and they didn't know, you know, what it was that they were feeling. And we even actually, while we were both in comas, one of the burn techs, just was so curious about it, and she actually was baptized by our bishop.
She was taught the discussions
in our house
while we were asleep yeah. at the hospital.
Is that right?
In a coma.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
And
mm-hmm.
she actually joined the church while we slept through it all.
Do you remember Christian coming into your room and speaking to you? You were so medically induced out of it, right?
No,
did you ever hear his voice, or mm-hmm.
I'm sure I did, but I don't remember.
Mm-hmm. And so tell us about your recovery. How long were you there in that medically induced coma?
For about 3.5 months I was. And then they got me in a stable condition enough to fly me here to the Salt Lake City Burn Unit, the University of Utah. And I stayed there for a couple more months after. It was so awful, but I look back at it and I think a little bit like very special, very unique opportunity. And hopefully you only get this shot once mm-hmm. to start over. So I just thought, if I'm going to do this, you know, you got to do it right.
When you say start over, what do you mean by that?
Just a whole new perspective on every single thing you do. Everything is different. And just what I experienced during the coma and just the things that happened to me are just, you know, personal in nature, but uh-huh. but just incredible enough to want to have a body enough to stay here and work through anything that comes my way.
I wouldn't want you to share anything that's too personal, but is there any part you can share?
Probably the thing I like to share the most with people is that I was given a choice whether I wanted to stay on this earth and, you know, I would have trials and pain, or, you know, stay comfortable and happy with family that I loved and grandmothers. And but I think my motivation was my husband, and I really wanted to see my daughters get married and my sons go on missions. And it was kind of a difficult decision, but I knew that this was where I wanted to be, and I was able to make that decision. And it's a lot better than I thought it was going to be. You know, I mean, I thought I'd be bedridden forever and, you know, horrible things cross your mind, but here I am.
You know, and I wish our listeners could see Stephanie. She is absolutely beautiful. She's in a beautiful ruffled blouse, and she is absolutely radiant. And so it's far from bedridden. Which wouldn't be the end of the world either, I'm sure.
No,
but you sit here beautifully wearing high heels even.
I know.
I just throw that in so all the ladies appreciate that you're walking
in
heels?
That's right. I'm back.
We mentioned your family. I think it is no coincidence that you both come from these large, supportive families. Tell me a little bit about both of your family backgrounds and how that has played into your lives in such a key way.
Well, you know, our families are very similar. Stephanie and I grew up in very similar, lots of siblings, loving parents, great childhood. And so naturally when we met, our courtship was very natural and obviously led to marriage.
You're both number eight, is that right?
Both number eight.
He's 11, I'm 9. So.
Okay.
But that has played, you know, our family that we have created, you know, is obviously patterned after the successes of our parents. And, you know, and when somebody experiences a trial of, you know, whatever their, you know, hardship is, to be surrounded by extraordinary family like mm-hmm. we had the blessing of, I think is a major component in the outcome of this accident. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, for a long time things were pretty dodgy, and the doctors, in their wise professional opinion, continued to try and break it to our family that this was not going to turn out good. But as time progressed, even the doctors and the nurses, they just kept seeing, you know, they stopped giving the
typical, gloom and doom forecast.
Right. Yeah. They quit doing that because they realized this was a special case. Mm-hmm. There was some higher power at play here. And the faith of our family and the countless others, people who read Stephanie's blog mm-hmm. and the way that this message kind of got out, it brought a whole bunch of people together to start praying for us. And it is I've said this before, it's a tremendous thing to be on the receiving end of that much faith and prayer. And that's what's brought about the miracle.
We're going to talk about that blog in just a minute, but I do want to get Stephanie's perspective on the family support, because really, how could you have done what you've done the last 2 years without both of your families?
Oh, my goodness. That's why I'm here. And I remember waking up to my sister and my mom, and they didn't leave my side. They flew down to Arizona and stayed for... My sister has 7 children of her own, and she left them all to come and be by my side for long periods of time. My sister Courtney took my 3 children, planning on taking them forever if they needed to. And my sister Lucy took my baby, and they stepped in. They were just amazing. And you know, that's just an example of Christian's family, whose, you know, sisters would come and sing mm-hmm. to him and comfort him, and mother-in-law's feeding us. My mother-in-law fed us, and you know, just those are just, you know, examples of the power of strong families.
Mm-hmm. But day in, day out, that's a lot of service. I mean, I don't
that's
think people
a lot
really
of service.
Appreciate,
and it just goes on and on. And for us, that. I mean, I don't know how they every day would wake up and have to face, you know, this hardship.
We were also surprised and delighted to see how well Stephanie's family and my family in Utah and Arizona, when we woke up, they all knew each other and had been, you know,
buddies.
Been together for, you know, while we were sleeping and had been, you know, experiencing this thing.
United in
all
prayer
together.
And fasting mm-hmm. and faith, I'm sure.
Yes.
We felt like we were just... like kind of left out of the all the action.
That's true.
Well, you mentioned Christian Stephanie's blog. Didn't one of your sisters even take over your blog
yes.
while you were? Tell me about that.
My sister Courtney had a blog as well, and the day we crashed, the day after we crashed, she posted on my blog saying that we had been in an airplane crash and we needed prayers. And then she had so many people wanting to know about it, that she decided just to sort of hijack my blog, and she updated it every day and told people how I was doing and, you know, what was going on, and, you know, also the challenges that she faced every day with my children and her son, and mm-hmm. it just turned into a beautiful story.
It really did. Let's talk about that blog, because I know that it exploded in numbers
yeah.
after the accident, but it was chugging right along when you started it in 2005.
It was.
Tell me, how did you start that blog? How did that happen, and what motivated you to start it?
So funny. I started it when we lived in New Jersey, just sort of as a way to let our parents know what we were doing.
Were you newlyweds?
No, we had 3 children at the time.
Okay.
just first job out.
First job out of school.
And an adventure on the other side of the country.
And we were in the East.
We needed to keep the family on the West Coast up to date.
It was fun. It was a very fun time. And I just sort of felt like it was a creative outlet where I could, you know, have parties and show pictures. And it was, I felt like it was my very own magazine. I could make, you know, every
Editor-in-chief.
Yes, it was lovely. And then Martha Stewart, editor, picked up on one of my stories. And then it just sort of got bigger after that, and which was great for me because it meant more things I could do.
More motivation.
My kids loved it, and it was so fun. And it was meant to be because, you know, without that, the blog, I don't think... I mean, people wouldn't have from all around the world been supporting us and praying for us. And, you know, even financially, we were helped out quite a bit from people just all over donating. And that we're grateful. We're so grateful for.
You know, I think it's so interesting that people from all faiths, or maybe people that didn't have any faith at all, found your story. And it was so resonant with them. Mm-hmm. You know, it really resonated deeply. And I want you to tell me about that experience, hearing from people of other faiths.
That's been amazing. I've had several emails from people who are just atheists, don't believe in God at all, but they say, but I sure feel something when I read your blog. You know, or just people who say we believe in Jesus Christ, and we know that, you know, what we're reading is true, and appreciate that. And it's really brought different faiths from all over together. It's just a story of faith and hope, and it's a love story.
Absolutely. How has that changed your perspective on God's love for his children? You know, sometimes we get tunnel vision because we're very interested in our own ward and church job and things, but this was really a story of faith on a worldwide level.
Yeah, it started in the hospital with different nurses and doctors, some who didn't believe in God and some who did, and just were blown away by the story. And I think that's when it came to me that there are different people with different ideas and faiths, but this story just still resonates with every single one of us because it's a natural story of love and of God's hand.
At what point did you realize, oh, my blog has a big purpose, bigger than me?
When my sister said, Stephanie, you would not believe this, but so many people are helping you out and reading your blog. And, you know, they gave me a number of people that were reading it.
Okay, so tell me the numbers. Before your accident, how many? Do you know?
There were times where it was about, I think it, you know, it steadily climbed up to about 200,000.
Before.
Yeah. And there were times, remember in New Jersey, and you're like, you know, this is just kind of a hassle, and it was getting hard to keep it up. But once in a while, somebody would send an email and say, you know, your church, your faith, your life has inspired me. And they're like, all right, we got to keep going. And that was enough to... And Stephanie's... I have not ever done anything on the blog. It's been all
You can
Stephanie.
Brag on your wife. Feel free. Go right ahead.
Yeah, please do.
Well, and then so after the accident, things obviously, they just really... I mean, now they're up to, you know, close to 5.5 million from 200,000. But it's just kind of just real steadily just... kept growing, and I don't know why anybody reads it. It's just our life.
What it is that they feel the Spirit. It's that's what it is. I'm, you know, working through his hands. I'm doing everything he tells me to do, and I don't claim any of it.
What is your hope going forward with this blog?
Just same thing that I'm doing now. You know, I'm hoping to get people to come to Christ and be baptized. I hope that through my words and my tragedy turned miracle, turned wonderful story, that people will see that, you know, that there's a God. That's all.
I know that you've received letters or comments on your blog. that people tell you how you've strengthened their lives. And I'm not asking you to toot your own horn, but I think it would help people who are listening to hear some of the experiences of how your blog via the Spirit, right, has
yes.
worked for them
yes.
in their life. So not that I'm asking you to take credit for it, because you just said
no,
that you
me.
Didn't. But share with us some experiences that have been particularly moving.
I think definitely the one we'd already discussed about the nurse being baptized mm-hmm. was very neat. And also, you know, most of these great stories happened while I was sleeping. I don't really remember, but I think I've asked people to contact me if they wanted a Book of Mormon, and I was willing, Christian and I were willing to, I wanted to write my own testimony mm-hmm. in it.
And let me interject that if you go to Stephanie's blog, mm-hmm. then I love that you have down the side of it your favorite book
yeah.
and that you can click the Book of Mormon.
Yes,
yes.
And
okay,
fill out
so.
A sheet, and people from all over the world have done it, and we're up to about 800 Book of Mormons that we've given away to people, just whoever
different
wants
languages
one.
Too, yeah.
Yeah, all different languages. And you know, I can't write that many testimonies, but now we're starting to glue them in the books. But,
I say, there's a thing called printing.
Yeah, yeah exactly. Yeah. Just, you know, stories of how this book is changing lives, how we've already had about 8 baptisms take place since just sending the Book of Mormon out, simple as that, and missionaries picking up, you know, we tell them to go to their houses, and that experience has just been my favorite.
So you wake up after all these months in a coma and you have this new life. I mean, it's like you said, you're
yeah.
starting over.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what it was like the first time you saw your children.
That was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. I had to prepare for it, and we had therapists helping and working and I don't think anybody could have told me or the children anything that would have made that situation better. It was just a very hard, terrible situation. I looked completely different, and my children didn't have any idea. They were, you know, they marched right in thinking they would just see good old mom right there.
Well, they've still been looking at the same family portrait
yep,
on the wall
yep, this,
of you before the accident.
Yes, there was nothing anyone could say that would change their mind of who I was. And my son, the youngest son, Nicholas, didn't want anything to do with me, just held tight to my sister. My son Oliver was okay. Claire saw me, left, wouldn't come back into my room. And my daughter Jane, walked right in, and her face just turned white as a ghost, and she just looked down at the floor and wouldn't look at me. And she didn't for about 3 months. She just...
How old was Jane?
6.
She was 6.
Mm-hmm.
So when you went home with your children, you get to go home, and your children are struggling because it's a new life for them mm-hmm. and they're little. Tell me their ages.
My youngest was just had turned 2.
Mm-hmm.
Oliver was
3.
Jane was 5. Claire was 6.
Okay. All
three.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you gather your children and everybody's gone for the first time, the nurses, the doctors, the aunts, the uncles, everybody's gone, and it's the 6 of you. Tell me what that was like, and what do you tell those sweet children?
You know, the first thing we did was celebrate Jane's birthday. It was her birthday that we all moved into one house together. We had all been still. When I got home from the hospital, I lived with my sister, who's a nurse, who could take care of me. And Christian was at our new house, and the kids were still with sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to ease into it. And finally, we just said, let's just do it.
We got to go home.
Let's all get together.
Mm-hmm.
This is too hard. And it was Jane's birthday, and she was still not looking at me. But we had ice cream, bubblegum ice cream, and cake, and Christian made spaghetti, and it was just, it was a low-key time, but it was kind of like we looked around, and we thought, we remember this,
mm-hmm.
we did this, we know what we're doing.
Numbers.
It
yeah.
was, it was, oh, it was hard and lovely,
so hard.
And...
at that day, did you know it's going to be okay?
No.
Or not yet?
Oh, no. No.
I mean, if your little child won't even look at you, what did that do to you as a mother?
Oh, I just felt guilty. I felt awful. I felt like a monster. It was, I just thought she would just do so much better if she just moved in with my sister and just forgot that I was her mom. You know, I really said that. I really wanted that.
So what was the turning point then for her?
Well, one day, and I probably, I don't remember, but she was in the tub, and I just walked in on her, and she kind of was like a deer in the headlights, just sort of stared at me, and I said, Jane, you're looking at me. You're doing it. And she just got this big grin on her face, and it was sort of a relief for her. Yeah, I am looking at you. And
like, I can do this, Mom.
And then after that, it was just fine. It was just fine.
How about your oldest? Sometimes oldest children really take a lot of the responsibility on themselves, feeling like they have to take care, especially if they've got a sick mom or a hurt dad or whatever. How did your oldest do?
She was a little stoic at first, but she, you know, I think she realized that other people in the, you know, that's a lot to ask for a six-year-old. But she realized that there were other people in the family who were suffering. And
I think all of their little personalities have changed since the accident.
Tell me how so.
I think they're all just a little cautious. They're always worried when we leave. You know, are you coming back? Mm-hmm. Well, when are you coming back? Are you going to look different? Are the questions that we get every time we
still
go somewhere still. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, that wasn't what it was like before. And I think they just have attachment issues. They're just a little bit always, you know, wondering, you know, what's going to happen and where am I going and who's going to take care of me.
Do you ever look at your life today and say, why did this happen? Or do you feel like this was supposed to happen? How do you feel about it all when you look back?
I ask those questions. That's all I did in the hospital. Just why? Why would you do this? Why would I have to go through all this? I was a good person. You know, all those questions that we ask when we're going through a hard time. But now I don't care. I've got what I want. I'm happy. I don't need anything else. And I don't wonder why anymore. I'm so blessed.
And do your children, are they too young to understand that maybe this was a whole family adversity that your family was meant to have?
Yeah, we talk about that as a family all the time, that, you know, that we've had this hard time, but Heavenly Father is never gone. He's always with us, and, you know, they know.
Mm-hmm. They've reached a level of maturity for children that is, you know, uncanny a little bit, because I don't think not that you can compare one person's trial to another, because I'm certain that there's a lot of people who suffer in this world and suffer more than we did,
definitely,
through our thing. But, you know, our children, the fact that we had the infrastructure to rely on, you know, the gospel, faith, prayer, family, all of these things to rely on when it happened, and then in the long, hard road of recovery, I think that they've reached a level of maturity and that I think is going to make them, you know, more seasoned adults.
The best is when, you know, they played the Oprah show in their classrooms when we were on.
Their mom's
and
a celeb,
so we
too.
Were famous now, and everything was fine. We had met Oprah, and that was that was all worth it.
Yeah, totally. What do you miss?
Oh, just the ease of life. Just, you know, not having to scrub my body every single morning and still open wounds. I miss wearing skirts without tights. And I miss, you know, just those dumb little things. That's what I miss. I don't miss, you know.
What's better? Is life better in some ways?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I mean, you say that like it's natural, so explain that to me. How is your life better now?
Oh, I have so much more perspective in my life of where I am, who I am, and where we're going as individuals and as a family group and as husband and wife. And that knowledge is so powerful, and I would give anything now for what I have learned from this, I think.
You also said in either one of your articles or on the Mormon Message that you view your role as a mother and a wife as more divine than you understood before. Explain that.
It is. And I sometimes I just want to shake people, mothers who have just these children who are beautiful and they're always frustrated and, you know, they're not living up to the... There's just so many people that are so confused in their life right now with what's important and what's beautiful. And it's what they have right in front of them.
And tell me why we're confused, because I think this is helpful for moms to hear from your perspective. I mean, help us. What is confusing us?
We're all trying to be better than each other. I don't know what it is. It just drives me nuts. It just is one of those things that women, it starts out as women, we're trying to all be beautiful. We're trying to all have the successful husbands and the darling children and the fairy tale stories. And they definitely can be if, you know, you make it what you want it to be. But this is your life. This is what you've been given. And you make it how you want it. You don't make it what your next door neighbor's doing or what your sister-in-law has. This is something that's yours, your gift, and you make it your own. You don't try to make it somebody else's.
Do you have the chance to tell mothers this very often? And
I hope they're reading it in my blog. I hope I come across as trying to get that out, because that's what I want more than anything.
You know, your story is so inspirational. Your outlook is just incredible. One of the things I love on your blog is your two words of the day: awful.
Yes.
And
lovely.
Lovely. Tell me about awful and lovely, because, you know, as incredible as your outlook is, there have to be down hours, down days, down weeks.
Oh, yes. Yes. And I would be foolish not to mention that I cry still at nights, you know, in pain or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And or that my kids are being stinkers, whatever. It's not perfect at my house at all, but...
Awful and lovely. How did you come up with that? Tell me how you came up with that.
Because I thought, awful and lovely,
right?
We all have them. What are they? What are you going to make your lovely? What are you going to make your awful? You know, it's...
But it seems to me that you're sort of pointing your readers on the blog to count their many blessings, so to speak.
Yeah. Because we are so lucky. We are so lucky. We have what we have. Mm-hmm. And I just want them to know that. I used to crave and just beg girls and, you know, I'd just who were having trouble with their life and their what they look like. And I just wished so badly that I could go back and be that. You know, I missed being a mother and, you know, you have skin on your body. You know, don't complain about your whatever. You have skin and you can walk normal and eat with a fork. And, you know, those were just some of the little perspectives that I had that I wanted just to shout to everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, at least you have this. You be grateful, because I know what it's like not to, and it's not pretty. And now there's no way I'm going back to feeling like sorry for myself, because I've done that and I'm good now.
You speak about that in your Mormon message. Let's listen to a clip right now.
Today I woke up to rain. I got up and did the routine, breakfast, making lunches, trying really hard to do my girl's hair. I was in the laundry room folding clothes, and I went to the closet, touching all the clothes. A wave of emotion took me over for a few minutes. I missed me again. I mourned for that woman again. I felt that familiar sadness. But then it was followed by a beautiful spiritual confirmation that this is my new life. It is good. It is oh so good.
I don't think anybody would blame you for feeling sorry for yourself at certain points. Well, and there, in any experience of adversity, there have to be high points and low points. Yeah. Let me ask you this question. What is your best coping mechanism on those down days?
Christian.
I was going to say the same thing. It's Stephanie. It's having somebody to
confide in. Yeah, and we know.
He's been burned.
He knows what it's like. I've said it's
and understand
before I've been
wounds.
Like, you know, when you're pregnant, your husband has no idea what's going on. He's never been that way. He'll never know what it's like. But he knows what I'm going through. And so together we take it to the Lord and we figure it out. It's not easy.
Tell me how your marriage has changed.
We're definitely more reliant on each other, and you know, we've worked out some things that probably could have been worked out, you know, just, but it's stronger. It's not, it's way more stronger than, you know, people who've gone through similar problems like this have separated, and because they couldn't do it.
Well, sometimes adversity tears people apart.
Yeah.
How has it pulled you together? What is the thing that made you go together instead of apart?
I think we were just more, I think our orientation was more to go toward each other rather than apart. It just seemed more, I don't know.
You needed best friends. We're naturally talk to each other about it. Mm-hmm. And
the fact that we shared some of the same wounds and needed to heal the same way, mm-hmm, was also helpful. And
I'm sure.
And but we, you know, we prayed often together. And I think that those type of activities, mm-hmm, are what forge a relationship.
And honestly, he would have bad days and I would be good.
And they would reciprocate.
Yeah, every time. There was never where we both
were both up or both down.
Which is a huge miracle in
itself. It was a blessing, mm-hmm, that has gotten us through. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When Christian wasn't around, what's your best coping mechanism?
My children. My children around me is enough to boost me enough to get going. Just even if it's just sitting down to read him a book or talk to him, mm-hmm, you know, there's days when I just beg Christian not to let me take naps because I can't get back up after. It's so those days when I do take naps, I just say, come sit down by me and comb my hair and tell me how your day was at school. Mm-hmm. You know,
you said that your marriage is fairly similar. You know, you both looked at each other and there was just this telepathy between you.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're still us. So my question is, aside from some obvious spiritual growth, are you still the same, Stephanie and Christian, or are you completely different people?
I think we're the same. Well, you're the same. Am I the same?
You're the same. Of course you are.
Is your sense of humor different?
That is the one thing that I always had. This moment I woke up from my coma was just funny. You know, just laugh about it. It's funny. It'll be funny. I'll look back at this and think, wow, I did that, and that was funny. I had to wear those goofy compression garments. That was funny,
yeah,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny.
Tell me how you're doing. You said you still have some open wounds. What is, mm-hmm, your prognosis? You'll have surgeries?
They just did an amazing surgery on me where they took transplants. They put
tissue
expanders in my back, grew my back.
Big hunchback.
Basically, it was like my back was pregnant, growing and growing. Every month, they would make it bigger enough where they thought it was enough skin. And then they surgically removed the skin and cut my old neck off and put my back on my skin, on my neck. So my neck is, in fact, my back.
So the skin from your back is now the skin,
yes,
on your neck.
Yes. And so, you know, they're going to need to do some more work on that. And we have plans to fix my hands. And
they say, you know, you're a lifelong burn survivor. So, you always,
always have to be doing
real surgery, mm-hmm, hanging over.
I don't like to think that. But.
No, but when skin that is from another part of your body is grafted, say, on an elbow and it's not elbow skin, it doesn't work like elbow skin.
Yeah.
And so
that's why my neck is so fat.
It doesn't look fat.
Well, it does, but because your back skin is much thicker than your neck skin, so.
But I read where your skin would crack.
Oh yeah,
pain. So,
yes.
How much pain are you still in?
Every day I face pain. I wake up. It's the worst when I wake up because my skin has been, you know, just sort of still all night, and then in the morning I have to stretch it all out again. That's quite painful.
Mm-hmm.
Once I can get the morning over with, then.
You know, when you have scars of any kind, many people have scars that are on the inside that we would never know about walking by them. Some people, like you, have scars on the outside.
I would take that.
Tell me why.
Because it feels so good to feel good and to know that everything's right, that I'm doing I know I'm doing things that are right, and I feel the Spirit every day in my life. And I don't think I would want my spirit fighting with anything on the inside. I just see that as more painful than than what I go through, you know, on the outside. But that's me.
For both of you, Christian, we'll start with you. What's the biggest change then on the inside that we can't see?
I think it's an appreciation for what we have on the outside, meaning the mortal experience. Like I said earlier, you know, there was a time where there was uncertainty whether we were going to stay on this earth or go to the next, go on the other side. And the just grateful that our lives were preserved and we get to experience mortality in a joyful way as it was intended. And even with a slightly burned body and some scars on the outside, I'd still take it over ending this experience. And I, you know, and enjoying this time with family and enjoying everything about life. So that's that's been the
Stephanie, what about you? What is on the inside that people can't see that if you could, you'd tell them, which you kind of do through your blog, but tell us now.
Just kind of what I've said, just loving yourself, loving anything and everything about you, the things that you, you know, that you don't necessarily like, but that's you. And, you know, you can change. I can't change the way I look, but we can change inside of us. And that's kind of a hopeful feeling that I wish that I could just tell everyone that hopefully there's the hope there that you're never alone and there's always help.
You have girls that are reaching into crucial preteen and teenage years, and this world has a lot of body images that are supposed to be what we aspire to. And, you know, they're fairly unrealistic.
Yes.
What, because of your experience, can you teach your children about bodies?
I want them to develop their inner beauty, because their inner beauty, that is the spirit that was created before our bodies, and that is who we are. And our bodies are just the shells. And hopefully I can teach that to them. But there is a balance of, you know, keeping your outward appearance beautiful and lovely. And I want them to respect their bodies in a way that their inner spirit would want to dwell in that mortal shell that they carry, but not to take away the importance of keeping our outwardly appearance.
How do we teach our children then what a gift the human body is? And how lucky we are to have it without going through an experience. You know, how do we learn that vicariously through the two of you?
I think our children see it in the way that we, they realize that our appearance is different than their parents, their friends' parents. And I think that they see that and they realize that beauty on the inside can be manifested.
But I think
way.
The most important thing they've seen is that I'm still mom. I'm still me.
You're still capable of doing a lot of things.
Do the things I did before. And to them, that's all that matters. At first it was, wow, she doesn't look like my mom. And there was a lot of warming up to do. But once it was done. And the kids don't, you know, in fact, when I get dressed up, they'll say to me, wow, you look just like our old mom.
Really?
You know, yeah.
That's great.
But I'm there. It's me.
How is it when you go out, you're at the store, you're at a movie or something, and you get double takes?
Oh, that's still hard for me.
Is it still
hard? I'm still trying to get over that. I'm still working on that.
And so how do you teach your children to not be affected by that?
I mean, that one's
kids are embarrassed of their parents right
no
matter what. I mean, you know, I have two 15-year-olds, and I don't think I can do anything that doesn't sort of embarrass them on some level.
No, but, yeah.
Our youngest is kind of funny. He's defensive. If he catches somebody staring or doing, you know, something mean, he'll confront them.
Yeah, well, I think that I can't say much with confidence that I know how to handle that, because I still struggle with it. But, you know, I feel so much better when my kids are with me and we go places. I feel like I have the confidence that I need to face people who stare at me. And
do people recognize you and know you're Nene from Nene Dialogues?
Do.
And how is that?
You know, it's kind of awkward, but I know that if they know me, then they've prayed for me probably, and they've thought of me. And
that has to be a sweet
so
piece.
I'm more grateful. Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
We have a few minutes left. This hour has just sped by, and there are so many other questions I'd love to ask. But before we run out of time, you have this forum and this platform today to speak to people and tell them the things that you would like to tell them from your heart, your testimony, or what you've learned, or the changes that, if they made some tweaks in their lives, would have a huge impact. So, Christian, let's start with you, and then Stephanie, if you'll share with us as well.
Well, you know, if to use this form, I guess the message I'd want to share is a message of hope, and I have to bring this up. One of the messages from General Conference right after our accident was from President Uchtdorf about the infinite power of hope, and I remember listening to General Conference at the rehabilitation hospital, and it was a message I needed to hear at that time, because it was things were in terrible despair. I hadn't seen the children yet, and Stephanie was still in an uncertain state, and hearing that message of hope is what I needed to hear and wanted to hear, and it was enough to get me through that phase of despair until I had hope myself and realized that things were going to turn out, and they did. That's the message I would share, is that no matter how challenging life may become, now or in the future, or how it's been in the past, there is hope for a brighter day, and it the source is the atonement of Jesus Christ, and if we exercise faith in Him and pray often, that hope will be realized.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Oh, there's so many things that I wish I could share with everyone, and I'm lucky I get to do that on my blog, but I think today I would probably want to kind of go along with what Christian said about feeling that there is divine purpose in all that we do, and we can look at it the opposite way and live a miserable life, or we can take what we have right now and make it into something good, make it into something better. And I want that for everyone. I want that to know that there is a loving Heavenly Father who desires for us to grow from trials and experiences that we have on this earth, whether they be good or bad. And it's up to us to do that, and we can do it. We can do it. We have been given all the tools and more on this earth to get through anything that comes our way. A living prophet that we have on this earth that guides us is a miraculous tool to use. I've been through some hard times, and I can tell you that it will get better if keep the faith and pray. It does get better.
Stephanie and Christian, thank you so much for sharing such a personal part of your lives with us and for sharing the feelings of your heart with us. It has certainly been our privilege to have you here with us today. You have inspired us all here in the studio, and I'm sure you've inspired all the listeners around the world that are listening to your interview on the Mormon Channel. So may the Lord bless you both as you continue in this healing process, and thank you for the inspiration and hope that you give all who come in contact with you. We appreciate that so much.
Thank you, Ruth.
I'm Ruth Todd. This has been Conversations on the Mormon Channel. We hope you'll join us again as we meet people with compelling, inspiring stories that give us a new perspective for our own lives. Thanks for joining us.
This has been Conversations, a program featuring discussions with members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints with a unique perspective or an interesting story. Today's conversation has been with Stephanie and Christian Nielsen. Ruth Todd was the host. This program is available for downloading as a podcast, or you can listen to it on demand on the Mormon Channel. If you have feedback or comments on this or other programs on the Mormon Channel, or a thought you want to share that may be used on the station, call 1-888-MY-LDS-321. That's 1-888-MY-LDS-321. You can also contact us by visiting the website at radio.lds.org. Thank you for listening to the Mormon Channel. Tell your friends about us.